Yes, please ask your question.
Yes.
Ask your question.
Yes. Hi, hello. I have been working for 25 years in finance and business, and my passion, apart from that, business and finance, is the topics that you are treating, and I have been following you for the last 8 to 10 years. After a series of incredible events, I started working in sustainability 9 years ago, and I started putting everything that I found in finance at the service of sustainability, so environmental issues, social issues, governance, etc. After a very incredible event 3 to 4 months ago, I was practically, I was made the incredible gift of having to come to New York to work at the UN, to the United Nations, to onboard businesses in the Sustainable Development Goals journey. So when you yesterday opened your speech mentioning the Sustainable Development Goals, I almost fell off my chair and I immediately understood exactly what I was doing here. My question for you today would be, what happened after this meeting? Is there any kind of follow-up of that? And a little second question would be, have you ever tried to do exactly the same as you did, so explaining what you know to the business community, and if not, would you be open to do that?
Are you talking? Are you asking me specifically?
To you, and as far as I understood, you have been accompanied, you were not alone.
With Bruce, yes.
So Bruce and Greg, to
well,
both.
Well, I'll answer the first of all, congratulations on the good things happening in your life. I'll begin with the second question first. I speak to corporations and business groups all the time. We have for 20 years. This is only one small part of what we do. A lot of it is not made public. We go to speak in a corporation. They usually don't put it up on their website and say, you know, because it's not open to the public. So the answer is yes. We all speak with corporations. We speak with medical institutions. We speak with governmental agencies. United States military, all five branches. There's more than four. The U.S. Coast Guard is the fifth branch. We have worked with all of those. There is an opening to doing those things. And as far as the SDGs, those Sustainable Development Goals, checking with the UN, there are ongoing initiatives to support what now has been adopted as the 17 Sustainable Development Goals through the year 2030. So there are, if you're linked with them, they should be able to tell you what those are. All kinds of initiatives that continue from that in public education, healthcare. Some of it is in North America. A lot of it is in Africa is a big target for them right now. In Asia, so yeah, the answer is there's a lot going on. And I'm inviting you to follow up with your contacts and ask them what those would be. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Let's pick a question all the way in the far end there. Janice, there in the back. Thank you. Yes, you.
I have a question. I don't know if anybody can answer it, but I'm aware of two different types of Rh factor in the blood, positive and negative. Is there a reason behind that? Because the negative Rh factor is like a very low percentage of people on the planet, from what I understand. Can you comment on that?
Can Bruce start first?
Well, basically, there's all kinds of genetic variations. The Rh positive, Rh negatives are two forms. Now, the problem only comes when a woman is carrying a child with the opposite version, because then the child's system is connected to the mother's system. And her immune system says, well, we're Rh positive, this child is Rh negative, and the first thing it's going to do is start creating antibodies against that, which will then attack the fetus, or vice versa, attack the mother. So you're just really, what you're looking at is incompatibility on genetics, and the consequence that occurs. It's rare relatively compared to all the other things that are going on, but it's just another example of identity, that each of us has a unique genetic identity, and that when there's harmony between the parent and the child that's developing, the genes get along very well. This is not a moment for a side point that's brand new, and I think it's really important to tell you about it. A fetus and a placenta is foreign tissue, and it invades the mother's uterus. And it's like, well, how can that happen? It's foreign tissue. The immune system should eliminate it. There shouldn't be any pregnancy at all. Well, there's something new that people don't even know about because it's just coming into the forefront. All of our cells make viruses. Viruses are communication devices that alter the other cells in the field. When a placenta is invading the mother, the placenta cells make a virus that carries information that alters the immune system of the mother to send the cells away. So as they start to come toward the placenta is sending out signals saying, go away, and redirects the immune system. And it turns out all of our cells are communicating, not with just the nervous system, not with just what's carrying in the blood, but there's a whole new system, and it's just coming out. All of our cells make viruses, but the viruses are not negative. That's one of the most important things to understand. I learned that, oh my God, about 35 or more years ago when I gave a lecture at Yale. There was a very famous biochemist that I was with, and I was mentioning the fact about viruses as being one of the most important forms of communication. This reason is this: I got 50 trillion cells, but a virus can pick one cell out of all 50 trillion. And so the relevance about this is that, for example, cancer cells release viruses called exosomes. That's the word, exosomes. Release it, send it to the destination where the cancer is going to grow. So if I, let's say, I get a precancer cell on my leg, it sends a virus, let's say, up to several places in the body where cancers grow, like, let's say, the liver or someplace like that. They send the virus before the cell is fully cancerous to, let's say, the liver, and it reorganizes the liver cells. It's called terraforming. They prepare an environment so when the cancer cell leaves its origin source and gets to the destination, the environment is completely altered in its function by the viruses that were sent out to welcome the cancer cell and support its growth. So we're beginning to see, oh my God, there's a whole level of communication organized in the human body that's brand new, and it's just blowing people away because it's a basis of community. We come back to the nature of community, 50 trillion cells in total connection with this community and how they integrate this using viruses. And how important is it? Less than 3% of your genome are genes, less than 3%. 5 to 8% of your genome are viral genes. We have more viral genes than we have human genes. That's how important the communication system is of viruses. And this is new, and it also relates to the how can you alter the immune system by putting in a placenta that is totally alien and allowing it to be accepted? Because viruses can redirect the immune system. And so I just wanted to bring it out because how many of you have heard of exosomes? Couple here and there. Well, it's the future. And just laying that out, why? It's so brand new when it comes into full impact. You'll see how profoundly integrated 50 trillion cells are by localizing community, sending information. Viruses are information telegrams that are sent to sources to organize your life. And so what I learned from that biochemist is nature doesn't make anything that's all bad. Nothing nature makes is all bad. What it means is if you've looked at viruses your whole life as the enemy, it turns out that's because you've been focusing on the negative side. The most important side, as we see now, are exosomes, integration of the entire community to live in harmony with each other and support each other to live in a total community of 50 trillion cells. When community breaks down, that's called disease. So there's something brand new. I just need to bring it out. I'm sorry. Didn't have anything to do with the damn question, but.
Thank you. Here, the lady standing here, Janice or Gertrude, in green.
Thank you. All I want to say is I'm so grateful to be here, but I'd like to hand my question over to this woman right here, because she really wanted to ask you something.
Well, that's community in action.
Thank you.
I was just wondering if you could speak to the influx of new souls, these new children that are coming in with the evolved DNA and stuff. I know Lee Carroll's not out here right now.
Yeah, that's a question for Lee Carroll. Yeah. You can ask him on Tuesday.
but
maybe they have some.
Part of my question has to do with the incidence of autism and ADHD and some of these things that we're seeing with a lot of these new kids. I don't know if anyone can speak to that.
Do you want me to talk about that? I really can't speak to the new DNA, and that's probably much more your area. But I can talk about autism and some of the things that we found. This is wearing my What Doctors Don't Tell You hat. First of all, they're finding something really interesting about the mitochondria of cells. Now, mitochondria are actually the little power packs of the cell. I mean, Bruce knows all about this. But they're actually also a kind of stomach. And there's lots of these little stomachs in cells. And they power up the cell. And guess what part of the body needs the most power? Guess what part of the body needs the most powerful energizer? Of course, the brain. And what they are finding in illnesses as diverse as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's to ADHD is that there's some issue with the mitochondria, just not powering up as well as it should. And it's fascinating. There's a lot of great new research demonstrating that by essentially repowering these cells, you know, fixing the mitochondria, we can reverse those kinds of illnesses. They're reversing Alzheimer's, they're reversing Parkinson's, they're reversing the kind of disease that Stephen Hawking had, you know, motor neuron disease, Huntington's, and ADHD. So this is just one more area of the new science that's demonstrating that some very simple mechanisms, you know, that nature is so brilliant, but some very simple mechanisms. One of the reasons causing this, of course, is all of the environmental pollutants, the food we get into our bodies, the situations that women have when they're pregnant, the onslaught of all kinds of things, and vaccination is one giant element of that, an absolute onslaught to the brains of unborn children. Not because it isn't essentially a good idea, but because there's far too much and too early. And no one is looking at that. No one is allowing anyone to look at that. So there's a lot of this kind of thing going on. And the big take home here is that the assaults on the brain that we think are so irreversible are not. There are things that we can do. Simple supplements. Believe it or not, that all-purpose wonder supplement, coenzyme Q10, does a lot of repowering of mitochondria and can reverse some of these extraordinary symptoms for all of these kinds of things. So autism is a long, long question. Again, I'm not answering your thing about new children and deliberate autism. I'm just talking about assaults on the brain. And one thing that I do know a lot about is the Centers for Disease Control ran a study that was supposed to be the essential study to eliminate any idea that the MMR vaccine caused autism. This was supposed to be the definitive study. And it came out saying no association, there it lied, and that was supposed to be the last word on it. A whistleblower stood up, finally, with the Centers for Disease Control and said, that study was a lie. It was manipulated, deliberately manipulated in-house. There was a multiple times increased risk of autism with kids who have a certain kind of kids, boys, and a lot of them were African-American boys, a much larger increase in autism. And that got massaged out of the data. When it was retested again, when they looked at the data again, they showed this. Here's the shocking and disgusting part of this. Not one major news organization covered this story. The only people who cover this story are organizations like ours, What Doctors Don't Tell You, and, you know, people like Andrew Wakefield, who is the bravest man I know on the planet. So there are, the take home is that There are assaults on the brain. They can be eliminated. They are definitely recognizable, but they can be, a lot of things can be reversed far more than we understand.
That's, you asked essentially two, thank you, Lynn. You asked two questions, and I'm going to, again, answer the second one first. I have been blessed. I'm going to talk about this, actually, in my program this afternoon. And in the last 33 years of my life, I've spent a tremendous amount of time with indigenous populations throughout the world, and not just studying their traditions, but studying and living with them. And one of the things, one of the most pronounced things that I discovered is that in many of the populations that I spend time with, in the Peruvian Andes, for example, I spend probably the most time there. But also when I was in Tibet, there are people there of advanced age, and I'm talking 120, 25, 30 years old, that are documented, and then there are yogis that are older than that, but they don't get passports, so we can't document them. But here's the key. These people, they live to advanced age, and they don't have the diseases that we see in our culture that are often called the diseases of old age. You don't see Alzheimer's and dementia, advanced dementia, like my mom has. You don't see that there. You don't see an upsurge of breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer. You don't see ADHD. You don't see autism in the kids. So what that tells you is it's not about the age. It's about how we live as we attain that age. It's about what we're doing in our everyday lives. And as Lynn said, there are all kinds of studies that are happening. I mentioned this the very first day I spoke here. I said, science, I'm a scientist, we're all scientists. I'm a scientist, and I believe in science. Science does not have all the answers, and to a large extent, science has been hijacked. And it's been hijacked in the West by politics, by corporations, by religion, by the church. Special interest, it's happening when we talk about disease. It's happening when you talk about climate change. It's happening when you talk about evolution and where we come from. The science is being cherry-picked and it's being skewed, and what the media does share with you is the story to support their story. It's not the true story in many instances. So I think you have to do due diligence. I think it's really important to be aware of that. Vaccinations are, you know, a perfect example. We went, when I was born in the 50s, we had about six vaccinations before we left the hospital. Now about 19 vaccinations are required before a child is allowed to leave if they want to attend public school in the U.S. And there's a whole story behind that. As far as the new DNA, I'm going to share with you what I know to be true from the world of science. It's less about new DNA. It's more about the activation of the potential of what the DNA is that we have within us. It can be seen as a new form of DNA, but we all have the potential. And I think what has happened, the generation we're seeing now, the previous generation has done such a good job of creating a world for the young people today where they do not have the stress factors that existed in the previous generation of a global war, for example, of nuclear annihilation. I mean, we were talking about this. We all grew up learning how to crawl underneath our school desk and assume the position of the hand behind the head in case we see a mushroom cloud out the window of the schoolroom, saying that somehow that's going to help, you know? Our young people haven't had to do that. So their bodies, they are free to express to a greater degree the potential of the DNA that we all have. And you and I can do this as well. You don't have to be a young person. We all have this genetic potential, and this is what Bruce's work is all about. It's epigenetics. It's assuming the environment, thought, feeling, emotion, belief, nutrition, as well as the physical environment to allow that DNA to express what does it really mean to be human. And what Dr. Joe, my dear brother Dr. Joe, I wrote the foreword for his new book, and I was thrilled to do it because what he's talking about in terms of being superhuman, what he has identified as superhuman, I think, is our natural state. It's not that we are extraordinary. That is the ordinary way to be that we simply have forgotten. And as we begin to embrace that and all of these factors, then we become that new story that we're talking about. And it is reflected. You'll see a drop in the incidence of autism. You'll see a drop in the incidence of the cancers and things like that. It's not about how long we live. It's about how we live as we attain that age. I know you wanted to say something about this as well.
Yeah, thank you, yeah, first of all.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I just wanted to add this because vaccination is obviously a big issue in our world right now, and I say that at least I have some experience. I teach immunology, and what people don't understand is a very simple fact. There is a natural vaccination system built into every human. It's always been there. That's how we've lived through all these millennia to be here. Guess what it's called? Tonsils. Tonsils are the unique vaccination system. They're in your throat. There's six of them. You usually get people take out two out of the six. But what people have always said, and it's wrong in the textbooks, that tonsils are to protect you against invasion. No, the tonsils are actually open to the outside to invite things in. It's oral vaccination. Oral is the way of doing it. If you go under the skin, you bypass the entire intelligence of the system. So the system being aware of what's going on, all of a sudden there's an infection, and none of the sentries, none of the knowledgeable cells that are watching say, where the hell did that come from? It doesn't fit in their world. They have sentries at every entry point. Tonsils are designed to bring in the outside world, and they diminish around age 12, thymus and tonsils, because by then you've sampled your known world. And after that, they're not as necessary as they are in the earlier point. Why is it relevant? Oral vaccines are, in my understanding, the only legitimate way to vaccinate a child. Once you stick a needle under the skin, you violated the integrity of a holy system, and the consequences are profound, autism, all kinds of diseases. It's amazing. And again, it's business. It's a total damn business. And I think, personally, I have to admit this, it's a violation of human rights for somebody to tell me I got to inject their poison to send, to live a life.
Yeah. And you know, we think this is new. When I was in the corporations back in the 1980s, I was a director in the defense industry in software development. And they came through with vaccinations, and they strongly encouraged all of the management to make a good example for the employees by accepting the vaccinations, and I refused. And I was the first one in it was Martin Marietta Aerospace was the name of the company. I was the first one that refused, and they could not understand. They'd never heard of any of this stuff that we're talking. So they based their decisions on what they understood and knew to be true. They didn't know this. So I think this is another reason. People say, why are these conferences important? This is where you find the stuff that you're not finding in the mainstream. The mainstream media has been hijacked, just like the science has been hijacked. So if you depend on mainstream, or if you depend on some glossy magazine in the airport newsstand to get your information, you are part of what it is that the plan that to disempower us through that information. And it's through conferences like this. So you're talking to the people. In Bruce's case, he was on the founding level, 1967, of stem cell research and epigenetics. He's got the papers to prove it. So you're not seeing this in the mainstream, but this is how you find out. Now it's up to you. Due diligence. Go and do your work. Seek it out. Do the research on this, and you'll find that what we're being told is it's not the story.
No, and, but you'll find the real story in one glossy magazine.
That's right.
What doctors don't tell you.
Yes.
Yeah, no. It's in the stores. It's in the stores. By the way, they tried to shut us down. We just had our website hacked into for God knows how long. We've had that several times. They tried to take us, this is doctors and the establishment, tried to get us out of the stores. They tried to stop our distribution. They pulled us out of a couple of stores, and the readers were so incensed, they started boycotting the store. This was Tesco in the UK. So the Tesco started sending them 10-pound vouchers to make up for it, saying, sorry, but here's a 10-pound voucher. And all the readers were ripping up the 10-pound vouchers and sending them back, so they had to put us back in the stores.
All right. Next question, please.
My name is Neil Shah. I want to thank you all for sharing your knowledge, and personal thanks to Greg Braden for inviting me as his guest. I'm a medical doctor, and in the medical field, I've been through the most government-level colleges to now at Harvard, and I've seen how the research happens. My question is, the current system of research puts disease as a category, being present or absent. My understanding from quantum medicine and quantum physics over the last few months has been that the health and disease should be a continuum, and different diseases are just different names given by the medical system according to different environments. Is there an objective way we can measure a person where exactly on the health disease continuum that person is? And that way, science cannot be allowed to hijack and manipulate the statistics by categorizing a disease present or absent.
You know, I'll tell you, the Russians are way ahead of America on this. And we didn't know this. For 44 years, these two countries engaged in the longest undeclared war in modern history. It was called the Cold War. And it was only after the end of, by the way, the 30-year anniversary of the wall coming down is like pretty quick here, yeah. So it was only after the end of the Cold War we began to share the research, and we found out they're light years ahead of us in terms of subtle energy medicine and electric body and exactly what you're talking about. To the best of my knowledge, Western medicine, they are so entrenched in the standard model that the disease is either present or it is absent. The same with pain. I was with a friend in the emergency room recently, and the doctor, all they want to know is there pain there or is it not there? My friend said, well, I wouldn't call it a pain, but there's, you know, I could feel a pressure. The doctor said, no. He said, if you feel anything, it's pain. So it's either, it's one or the other. So the answer is this thinking does exist. It's not common, to the best of my knowledge, in American medicine, but it is. I would check out some of the Russian literature.
One person who is doing that and very successfully and recognized in Russia is Dr. Konstantin Korotkov. Do you remember that I talked about him? He discovered a way to do what used to be called Curlian photography, and is Dr. Fritz Albert Popp discovered many years ago, or in the 1980s, I think, that there was a tiny, subtle light coming out of the body, and that it was also a communication system between elements in the body, and it was a communication system with the outside world, and that it would go up and down according to the health or disease of the organism. Now, Konstantin Korotkov took that one stage further by being able to measure it very, very, very subtly with his GDV machines, which excites those photons hundreds of thousands of times and then allows that information to be captured and interpreted in a computer system. Korotkov is recognized by the Russian government and the medical institutions there, and also many medical institutions outside of there, for the accuracy of his GDV machines in catching things very, very early, or showing this continuum just exactly of what you're talking about, of health or disease. And his devices, he even has these little devices called BioWells, where you can stick a finger in. Anyone can buy one now. They're sold in the West now. And it will very accurately tell you where you are on the spectrum and pick up things quite early. The other thing, of course, to recognize is that there are increasing numbers of doctors who are not just looking, you know, the bad guys aren't doctors, you know, and thank you for coming to this conference, by the way. Thank you. You know, there are increasing, I just spoke to somebody yesterday, a wonderful doctor who works in intensive care and does healing on his patients. So more and more doctors are understanding that it's not about the carpenter, it's his tools. That they are given inferior set of tools that are a business. As Bruce says, it's an absolute scandalous business that's been likened to the mafia. I'm talking about Big Pharma. And so more and more doctors are embracing other tools that give us much more subtle measurements and ways of dealing with not only physical illness, but emotional illness, spiritual illness, community illness. Because after all, there are four pillars of health. And it's not just about the food you eat. It's not just about your physical body. It's about your whole place in the world. And more doctors are understanding that's what we have to measure. That's what we have to treat.
Right here, can you please stand? Yeah, in white, yeah, if you can stand, and Gertrude will give you the mic.
I am Eskild from Denmark, and my English is not the best, but it's my best. I will talk about two extra dimensions about this paradigm we are embracing. And that is, in Denmark, I have not heard any scientist known anything about these things. And the media don't know anything about it. And I think we are in a point where it is important to let this knowledge, which is so precious and important for humanity, let this knowledge go to normally people, to everybody. Because it is possible to write a book. I have just finished a book I've written in 2 years. It's not published, but it is with a target group of everybody. And among everybody is also journalists. And as it is now, it's difficult for the journalists to write about this paradigm, because what is most known is different books, among other things, your books, that they are excellent, and they should be this way. But many people has difficulty in reading them. If they don't have a background in spirituality or don't have a background in science. But I think it would be necessary or and important that this paradigm could grow from the bottom up together with top down, as I see your work, important work.
Thank you.
We want to honor you, yeah. And if you could ask in one sentence the question that we can respond to. I agree with what you're saying,
yeah,
but I don't know the question.
I have just one word. I think we need a name for this paradigm. And I could suggest oneness paradigm. But my question is, if you would comment of this intention to let the paradigm grow from bottom up together with the way it goes now. You understand?
The answer is yes.
It is possible. No.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
I know it's possible.
This has been happening. This is where the basis for all of our work. Everyone learns differently, and that's the key. Everyone learns differently, even in this room. And if you all notice, when you came into this room, some of you have been with us before, some of you were brand new, and we work not to be too technical. We work, hopefully, to be interesting. We work to bring you new information. Everyone learns differently in the world, and we are a microcosm of that. And the truth is, the honest truth is, that there are many people that don't see the relevance for this work in their lives, in their world. But I agree that we are in the past, and I'm going to say Joe Dispenza and I have had this conversation, and Joe and Bruce and I had, all three of us, and Lynn to some degree in the way that you did, we made a choice to leave the traditional path that disseminates information. We could have stayed in a university environment, published peer-reviewed papers that it takes years to get out, that very few people would see, and some obscure journal. And Bruce and I talked about this. We both made a choice. We said, let's take well-researched information and let's bypass that system and go directly to the mainstream, to the general public, because we need this now. And, well, thank you. Joe did the same thing. And I want to tell you how quickly this works. In 2008, I released a book that was called The Divine Matrix. It is the science of the field that connects all things. It was considered a fringe book fringe science, pseudoscience. And when I went to my own hometown to do my book signing, I went to the bookstore and the book wasn't in the front. And so I started looking at the bookshelves. I couldn't find it on any bookshelves. And so I asked, I said, where is the book that I am signing tonight? She said, oh, it's on the occult bookshelf in the back of the room. All right, that was 2008. Now, 2010 years later, what happened is that book is required reading in physics and science classes. It is the basis for mainstream television specials. A movie called Entanglement is based upon that with Hollywood actors. And it's common knowledge. Everybody knows that there's a field that connects all things. Lynn is a big part of bringing that information forward. So that's how quickly it can change by coming from the grassroots up. And what's happening, what we're doing, I just want to tell you what you're doing right now, is when you accept as your everyday truth the facts of what is being shown here, science has to catch up with you. Your doctors have to catch up with you. When you stop going to your medical doctor because you know more about whatever's happening, as Joe said yesterday, than they do. And this is what is happening. Science is struggling to stay relevant in the mainstream, and they've got to catch up with the new deep truths of our existence that we're bringing forward. So in a very real sense, it is happening from the grassroots up, from the top down.
One fact to give you about this. One fact. The wellness industry is now 3 times larger than the pharmaceutical industry.
Wow, I didn't know that. Awesome.
If you want to know what a grassroots movement is, that's what it is.
Thank you.
Good and question, thanks.
We'll move to another question. All the way down there, we'll give a chance to that part. Please stand up with the black shirt. Yes.
Hi, for the heart-brain harmony, Greg, that you're talking about, for the 0.1 hertz, can you recommend a binaural beat that would help induce that state quicker for people who may be in a more stressed environment?
The question is, can I recommend something that would help someone to move into the 0.1 hertz?
Binaural beats.
You know, the thing I would recommend is take a walk in nature. And okay. honest to God, because nature, you're like laying the foundation for what I'm going to do this afternoon. The 0.1 hertz is a fundamental heartbeat of Mother Earth, and this is why it feels so good to us to take a walk in the forest, to go down by the water. I live in the high desert, to walk in the mountains, because what we're doing is our body is naturally coming into harmony with that fundamental heartbeat. If you want, there are Jonathan Goldman, my dear friend, spiritual brother Jonathan Goldman, I've known him over 30 years, is a pioneer in sound healing. And he does have recordings that will help to do that. But I'm just transparency here. I am a purist, all right? And I'm not into gadgets if we don't need them. And I would much prefer going to the source of Mother Nature. Jonathan's work is awesome. If you can't get out, check out his CDs. I actually used one of them yesterday when we did our Heart-Brain Harmony yesterday afternoon. That was Jonathan Goldman's CD that I was using with you because we weren't in nature. So the answer is yeah, that's what I would do. Good question, thanks.
By the way, the Jonathan Goldman track is the track that I play with the Intention Experiments too. Yeah, Reiki Chance.
Yeah, okay,
Reiki Chance, Choco Ray.
I'm going to text Jonathan today and tell him his praises.
Lynn, which track is that? Some people were asking exactly.
It's called Choco Ray. It's from the album Reiki Chance. And it also came about by accident, because the very first Intention Experiment, I thought, we were doing it in a conference like this, and I thought, gosh, 10 minutes, it's going to be a long time for people to do this if they haven't done it before. So I said to my husband, run down to the bookstore, Bri, get us a track. So he goes there to the bookstore owner, and he says, what should I play? What should I get? And he says, here, take Reiki Chance. This is good. Try the first track. So we played it, Choco Ray, and my program for doing Intention is called Powering Up. And later we discovered that Choco Ray for Reiki Masters, it means essentially powering up. There are new accidents.
The track I used yesterday was from a CD entitled Holy Harmony. It's the whole side is one track. So yes, it's one piece.
There's a lady, please stand there. Yeah, Yes, you. You. Yes. Yes, Gertrude, if you can give her. Yeah, please stand again. Stand again. There you go.
This one?
Yeah, in white shirt. Yeah. Okay, you have. Well. Okay, you have the mic. You can ask too.
That's okay. You're all in the field.
Yeah. Okay. Yay. Thank you very much, and thank you for your incredible bravery for denouncing vaccines and such, because it's a real problem for anybody that's in the healthcare field, because we are at the mercy of legal battles, etc. So we're always discounting what we believe in. So my question is there a plan? Is there society something? Let me rephrase that. I belong to transition towns, which is all about peak oil, et cetera. Do we have an equivalent in healthcare, looking at how do we create a new health paradigm, looking at the pursuit of the fulfillment of mind, body, and spirit as the epitome of health? And what does that do to reshape the structure of society? So I'm looking at the municipal laws. What do we do at a municipal level to shape a society that supports the pursuit of each individual to reach their full potential mind, body, and spirit?
Well, there are different ways of, it's a good question. It's a little bit of a complex question, and I'm just gonna share my perspective of one part of that. Well, I live in a rural community in northern New Mexico, and it is kind of a microcosm of what I see happening in other parts of the world. And I'm not going to say it's only because of the vaccines, but the vaccines are what pushed the community over the edge. Public schools said to the parents, your children can only attend if you receive X number of vaccines. Well, this is a holistic community. People grow their own food. They drink their own water out of their own wells. I mean, they're digging their own wells just to make sure they're good wells, so there's no chemicals in the wells. They're refusing to vaccinate their kids. So now what they are doing is they have formed homeschool communities, and they are educating their young people, bypassing the public school system. The public school system is now taking a hit because there's the kids, 40% of the kids in northern New Mexico are now homeschooled up through the sixth grade. So they're not in the public schools. They're trying to make this illegal. They're also trying to make it illegal for people to, you can still grow your own food, but they're making it illegal for you to share your food in the farmer's market or share your food with other people. They said because of hygiene, because they can't guarantee the hygiene. So what's happening is enough people are, I mean, 40%, that's a big part of the population. By the way, they also are doing this with the tax system. They are using over 40 to 50% is the estimate, are using barter in northern New Mexico, bypassing the system, and they've created barter communities. So they are forming their own communities to provide what they need in the way they want to do it. And the pure economy, the economics of what they're doing, is forcing the public regulators to rethink what it is that they are mandating. So I think this may be one of the ways that this, not the only way, but it may be one of the ways this happens.
What? I didn't get the full question. But,
do you want me to go ahead then? We also have to remember that there is an extensive wellness community out there already. You know, there are amazing, we write about alternative treatments of all varieties and what doctors don't tell you. And I am just blown away by the breadth and the reach of these modalities to heal people. And so it is about, we have that already. And as Greg said, sometimes it all comes down to money. You know, and it's not just the alternative communities that are embracing an alternative way. Believe it or not, the conservative Christian churches, they hate big pharma, they hate vaccinations. They have an overwhelming number of kids that are being homeschooled now. So it's about, you know, local communities coming together and saying no more, and being able to insist that with both their local political power, but they're also paying with their wallets and refusing to go that route. And also, we have to recognize, too, the number of doctors now who are embracing integrative medicine, who are using the... I mean, that is an amazing, amazing movement in North America. Absolutely brilliant. You know, it's just taking off in the UK, but we see in huge, huge numbers here where doctors are really looking to alternative ways of healthcare. So I think it is a combination of our wallet power, our you know, the power of the dollar, and also the power of the local vote, plus connecting with the doctors, the integrative doctors who are there. There are loads and loads of them practicing all over America, and I'm sure the same for Canada. And just connecting with them and just pushing the paradigm forward.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to bear in mind, we are in the midst of a transition. And if you're in the middle of it, sometimes it's hard to see it because you're in it. But we'll look back on this time 30 years from now, and we're going to look back and say, this is where the choices were made, because a lot of the medical doctors are good, good people. They're doing what they know, what they have been taught. Bruce, this is why Bruce left teaching, so that he could inform people of what they know. So you cannot beat Western medicine for diagnostics, all right? It's the best diagnostics. What you do after the diagnostics, those are where the alternatives are coming in. And a lot of I go to a holistic MD, and he's really open-minded. He and his wife, they have a practice together. And what he'll say to me, he'll say, Greg, I don't understand everything that you are doing, but it seems to work for you, and I'm open to learning, and I will support you in your learning process. When I talk to him about an herbal therapeutic dosage of a standardized, high-potency nutrient versus a prescription. And I'll bring him in the documentation that say, here's the placebo, here's these the herbs, here's the prescription, look at the side effects. No, and he's open to that. And I think he is an example of what we're seeing. So it is a transition. It's not like this is where it is. We're seeing, I mean, we've only had this kind of medicine for about 130 years. And we're seeing this transition. And 30 years from now, I think you're going to see a very different medical model. But they're all doing the best they can. Most of them. I'm going to say most of them are doing the best they can.
I'd like to just add to that very simply on the money issue. You vote with money. That's a simple line. You put your money in a place and that will grow and the other ones will die. And the other important thing is that we've been talking about, less than 1% of disease is actually something organically wrong with us. And if we understand that, then why are we having all this disease? And the answer is because we're not living in harmony. If we start living in harmony, that whole damn thing will collapse because we don't need them. We make our own pharmaceutical drugs in our own head, and we can create anything we want. We just have to have some kind of evidence to ourselves to prove to yourself you can do this. You need to know how to do this, because once you do, you are free. You are not a victim anymore. And I so appreciate it, because I don't have a doc. I haven't had a doctor since 1992. And that's only had a doctor because Stanford paid for it. Once they sent me a bill from the insurance company, I thought, what, are you crazy? I can't afford that health insurance. So the reality is, when you take your power back, you are no longer a victim. You are creating. You are a creator. That's what we've been talking about. What do you want to create? This or something different? And as Greg and Lynn said before as well, you could fight the system, but it's not worth it. Why? You put your energy against them, they have more energy against you, they neutralize your energy, you just wasted your entire time. The only way to successfully do this, step outside the system and create the one you want. And that's what Greg was just talking about.
Thank you. We said yesterday, that's Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller said, you'll never change the existing system by fighting it. He said, if you want a new way of living, find a better way to do what you want to do, and the old system will simply fall away. If everybody stops following the old system, there's nothing there to support it. So you don't have to fight it.
I've always wanted to start a movement that would ask people to stop buying a particular drug. Everybody in a whole country for one day, and just make that the statement. And boy, we can start with opioid painkillers, eh? Hey.
Janice,
thank you. Our mic runners, thank you for running.
Yes, thank you, Janice.
Thank you. This is for Bruce Lipton. I just want to thank you. As a physician, you changed my life.
You changed your life.
Well, with your information, but this is actually a question. Your presentation today was so wonderful, and I'm a mother, and this information needs to go to children, smart children. And I thought you were so powerful. I went to school for 22 years. You're an amazing teacher.
He is a professor in the university.
Yeah.
I mean, download very well, don't I?
Yes, you do. I went to medical school, and you would have been one of the lectures I wouldn't miss. And if you go to medical school, you miss a lot because you have to study. So I just want to say, have you thought of, I don't know if you know who Dr. Quantum is, but making a series of videos available for children so that they can learn this? Because like my son and daughter absorb this stuff. My daughter's 10, and one day at dinner she said, Mom, I can't really explain it, but there's no time. Really, you're so gifted, and it's so hard to engage kids, especially special kids who are so bored. This is such important information, I think, for kids from 5 to wherever. So I just wanted to know if you'd ever thought about doing this.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
You got a new assignment, Bruce.
As we talk about, the whole fact is children are programmed from the last trimester of pregnancy through age 7. Consciousness does not kick in as a brain function fully until after age 7. That means that our consciousness is below alpha, it's in theta, which is hypnosis. So a child is in their state of hypnosis for the first 7 years. And the issue is this, it's called conscious parenting. We have to recognize that what people say to their kids is not being comprehended by consciousness, it's just being downloaded. And this is the biggest issue, because parents don't recognize everything they say and do is being copied by that child. So if we want to help the children, first we have to get the adults to understand, because they're the teachers of children. And this is why it goes back to us, not the school, but to you and to you and to you. Every one of us is a teacher. And if we start teaching the young kids, they will not be trapped in the victimization that this system has put upon us. We are not victims, we are creators.
This is the key. This is the key. Who asked that question? Where are you? If we want to see a different world, we need to share a different story with our young people. Now, I'm developing a curricula for public school, and I took this curricula, sharing much of what we're doing, not everything, but sharing a lot of the new discoveries. The fact that nature's based in cooperation, for example, I think is fundamental. The fact that we don't really know where we come from. I'm not saying what we are, but be honest and say we don't, but there's something really special about us, to put the specialness, the sanctity of life, so kids aren't cyberbullying other kids. You wouldn't cyberbully someone that you feel special about, and you wouldn't hurt yourself and you feel special. So I took this curricula and I talked to a publisher, and I said, will you partner with me to bring this to public school? I'm going to tell you the exact words from the publisher. They said, whatever you do, Greg, don't bring me a book on peace, because peace doesn't sell. Don't bring me a book on public education, because it's not going to sell. They said, if you want to develop this, you're on your own. All right, so in 2015, I was nominated, and the nomination was accepted for the very prestigious Templeton Award. It is pegged to, it's the Nobel Prize of Science and Spirituality is what it is. It's a 5-year standing nomination. So I've got until 2020, and should I be blessed with that award, those funds are earmarked to kick into high gear the development of the curriculum. It's a video development, it's very expensive, development of this curriculum. If it doesn't, I'm doing it anyway, it just takes longer because I'm paying for it. But there is a demand, and I have teachers, and I've had teachers in this room come to me and say, we have a way to get this into our classrooms, even in the mainstream. So I think it's going to be kind of like when that wall fell in 1989. When it starts, there's going to be a wave, because what they'll find is that the young people, they learn easier, they learn faster, they're more interested, it's more relevant, they feel better about themselves, they're going to see the statistics of hate drop, and other schools are going to say, I want what they're having. And I think that's the way it's going to happen. So there is an effort to do this. It's not being supported from the top down. It's got to be us choosing to teach our young people a new story. And it's a story that is based on the deepest truths of our existence, not the false assumptions of an obsolete science.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good question.
I want to add something else about young adults, because they've written off as snowflakes and, you know, people who don't have any interest in changing things. They don't have any interest in even paying attention. They have no attention span. This is what millennials are talked about all the time, you know, the special generation. I was really fascinated to be in New York last December. There was a little-known conference. It was just going to be a little debate being run by a small magazine, a socialist magazine called Jacobin. And it was, they had decided to call it the future of capitalism, ? And they were going to have people from a libertarian magazine versus people from their magazine debate. Now, this should have been an event that had 50 people in it, right? They got a big venue. It sold out in a couple of days, 450 people. So they moved it to a larger venue. It sold out. It was 900 people. It sold out another day later. Guess who the audience were? Overwhelmingly young people in their 20s and early 30s. For them, capitalism is the god that failed. They're not seeing any kind of benefit from this. They're seeing that they're going to live in worse circumstances than their parents now for the first generation in many years. And they're starting to question all kinds of things. And when you start looking at the stats for millennials, they are much more socially conscious. They are voting with their wallet, as Bruce says. They're avoiding companies that they think are not working with integrity. And so this kind of disparaging of the young people and saying they don't care, they're not conscious, is completely false. They are, and they can be enlisted in this new movement. I really want to encourage us to do things like that.
So I'd like to close this panel by asking all three of you if anyone here will be the last thing you will be able to hear from you, what would you, your advice would be?
Shine on, you crazy diamonds. Shine on. Go ahead. All seriousness aside.
I think the most important understanding right now is that what's going on in the world, the chaos you see, is we're in the exact place we're supposed to be for evolution. The evolution says you cannot build a sustainable world on the foundation that we have right now, because that's causing the sixth mass extinction. So when you see the upheaval happening, rather than being afraid, I would be out in the front line saying, yeah, let's keep going, because the only way we're going to change is that we have to leave the old one behind. It is corrupt, broken, destructive of individuals, and destructive of the world. The millennials, to me, are the generation that says, I'm not involved. And why is it important they're not involved? Because a government can only stand as long as the people support it. And now that we have 50% about millennials, guess what? They're not supporting this system. And that means we're on the verge of a collapse of the existing system and the creation of a brand new system. So I don't live in fear, I live in excitement, because I know what the excitement is all about. The excitement is to get us from this place to the place that we will be able to thrive on this planet. And so rather than waking up and looking at the news and going, oh my God, Trump's doing this, la, 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 and then I get up and go, two legs, unfortunately. The one who's a citizen goes, oh no. And the one who's the evolutionary biologist goes, thank God. Why? He's destroying the system faster than anybody else could have done it. Yeah.
has to be. You know, if I came to this world from another world, and they dropped me off in Nanaimo for 3 minutes, and then they said, we're going to come and pick you up, so whatever you're going to say, say it in 3 minutes. What I would say, and I'm inviting you to really appreciate that this is no ordinary time in the history of our planet, in the history of our civilization, in the history of any nation, our nation, your nation, in the history of our evolution. It's no ordinary time. We are living a rare, precious window where cycles are converging to turn everything that we have held true upside down. And the stuff that's not true is falling away. And the stuff that is true, it's still true. It's not going to change. And we got to find out what's true and what's not. And one of the things that's not true is the story of us and where we've come from. There's something so unique, so special, so precious about human life. And we take it for granted because we're steeped in the story of not being special. But when we really understand how we function, what we find is we're wired. You are designed. You're wired to thrive in exactly these kinds of times. And the world is pushing you to the edge of who you believe you are so that you can unlock the mystery of your deepest truth and soar to the heights of your greatest potential if you simply say yes. And that is what these gatherings are all about. And I would say I am so deeply appreciative. I'm so grateful. Thank you for your trust in allowing myself and my friends and colleagues to share what we have shared over these hours. And it's not over yet. We've got more today. But what we've done in here together, because this is where the new story begins. That's what I would say. Thank you. Thank you. And then I get on my ship and go home.
Finally, I think that one of the problems with our current situation is that we've all come to believe we're so powerless. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. We need them to fix it for us. And I think that's the real misnomer. One of the messages I really wanted to give to you with our Power of Eight groups is to demonstrate to you exactly how powerful you are. I mean, in a heartbeat, in 5 minutes, you healed a bunch of people in this room. We're still hearing about healings. You may have healed yourself. We've seen in 10 minutes a little intention with the groups of Arabs and Israelis healed wounds that seemed to be unhealable in an instant. That's how powerful we are. That's what we really have inside of ourselves. And that's the new story we have to buy into now. As Bruce says, in this breakdown, you know, we know, we all sense this is the end of something. You know, we've heard everything from it's the end of food, it's the end of oil, it's probably the beginning of the end of the world, all of this stuff. In this ending is the only path to a better future. As you say, embrace it, but also understand the power you have inside of yourself. Don't listen to that story. Don't think that they have to come from the outside and fix you. Don't think that it only is going to be in the hands of the politicians. We don't need them to fix things for ourselves. We need to start a movement. And the big question I want to leave to all of you, you know, it's like that wonderful poem, First They Came. You know, it was written after the Second World War. First they came for, you know, the union members, but I was not a union member, so I did not speak up. Then they came for the Catholics, and I was not a Catholic, so I did not speak up. Then they came for the Jews, but I was not a Jew, so I did not speak up. Then they came for me, and there was no one to speak for me. And we're sort of at that period of time now. A lot of us are still turning around saying, well, what's the president going to do about this? Or what's the prime minister going to do about this? Or how are we going to deal with this with the hospitals or the doctors or whatever? Forget all of that. The big question is, what are you going to do about it? You know, we have to enlist all of us are now. I want to ask you and leave you with one big question. What's going to be your contribution? to making a better world.
So please give a warm thanks to Ms. Lynn McTaggart, Greg Braden, and Dr. Bruce Lipton for sharing their time in this panel with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow.